Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Bright Star audition dates announced. Basin Theater Works has announced the audition dates for the upcoming musical Bright Star. The auditions will take place at 6 p.m. January 20th and 3 p.m. January 21st at the Black Box Theater at Odessa College. Bright Star is a musical written by Steve Martin and Edie Brickwell. The show is being done in conjunction with Basin Theater Works and Odessa College, as well as Odessa Arts. Auditions will consist of singing the prepared sides and a general dance call. People can register to audition online at tinyurl.com/3zb6aknb. The show dates are April 27th through 29th. More information can be found at Basin Theater Works at tinyurl.com/yc-2wu9y4. Obituaries. Reverend Robert Lee Bratcher, Sr., Odessa. Reverend Robert L. Bratcher, Sr. entered his heavenly home on Tuesday, January 10th, 2023, surrounded by his family. Born in Lubbock, Texas, to Mr. and Mrs. Alexander Bratcher as the youngest of eight children, Bob came to know the essence of family and godly faith. Bob is survived by his wife, Carolyn McAdams Bratcher, daughter Rebecca Sutton and husband Robert E. Sutton, Jr., son Robert L. Bratcher, Jr. and wife Julie Bratcher, daughter Regina George and husband Mitchell George, daughter Ramona Griffin and husband Michael Griffin, 20 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and a host of brothers and sisters in Christ. Visitation will be Friday, January 13th at Mission Dorado Baptist Church from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m., with funeral services on Saturday, January 14th at 9:30 a.m. at Mission Dorado. Interment will be in Plainview, Texas at 4 o'clock p.m. on Saturday. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to Mission Dorado Baptist Church. We would like to express our appreciation to Monty Howard of Bailey Howard Funeral Home in Clyde, Texas, for his loving care of our grandbob in our time of need. Online condolences may be made at https://www.bailey-howardfuneralhome.com. Karen Montgomery Hilliard, Rome, Georgia. Karen Montgomery Hilliard, age 84, passed away peacefully in her home on Monday, January 9, 2023, in Rome, Georgia, from a year-long battle with cancer. She was born on December 28, 1938, in Atlanta, Georgia, to Ruth Dunaway Montgomery Wansley and John Reuben Montgomery. Karen is survived by her two children, William B. Billy Kennedy, Robin Kennedy, of Fort Worth, Texas, and Jennifer K. Talley, Jim Talley, of Rome, Georgia, and her grandsons, Samuel K. Talley, Rome, Georgia, and Jackson E. Talley, Rome, Georgia. Survivors also include her two sisters, Kim Simmons of Kosciuszko, Missouri, Mississippi, and Katie Dempsey, Lynn Dempsey, of Rome, Georgia. A private interment will be held in Conyers, Georgia. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made in her memory to Star Ken Boa Reflections Ministries at https://kenboa.org/donate/StarHoneyCreekWoodlands, 2625 Highway 212 SW, Conyers, Georgia, 30094-4044. Star the Community Kitchen of Rome and Floyd County. Patricia Allen Fry, Odessa. Patricia Allen Fry, age 85, of Odessa, was called to be with her Savior on Sunday, January 8, 2023, in Odessa, Texas. Visitation will be from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. on Friday, January 13, 2023, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Saturday, January 14, 2023, at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens Funeral Home. Patricia was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to Clayton and Carabelle Ham on February 23, 1937. Patricia is preceded in death by her parents and husband, Carlton Lewis Fry. Patricia is survived by her sister, Janice Green, her son, Anthony Fry, and wife, Della Fry, and her daughter, Monica Fry. Four grandchildren, Rhiannon Fry, Haley Joyner, Patrick Fry, and Meredith Craig, and five great-grandchildren, Clayton Craig, Mason Fry, Hudson Joyner, Benjamin Fry, Brooks Fry. In lieu of flowers, the family asked what memorials be given to Meals on Wheels or Reading Library of West Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Olive Estelle Hooper Munsell, Amarillo. Olive Estelle Hooper Munsell, 87, of Amarillo, Texas, went home to her Savior on January 8, 2023. A visitation will take place from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m., Friday, January 13, 2023, at McNatt Funeral Home in Andrews, Texas. Funeral service will be at Means Memorial United Methodist Church in Andrews, Texas, at 2:30 p.m., Saturday, January 14, 2023, officiated by Kevin Bushart. Estelle will be buried at the Old Andrews County Cemetery. Estelle was born in Linden, Texas on September 25, 1935. She was preceded in death by her father, Lee Von Hooper, her mother, Eugenia Wilson Morris Hooper Owens, her son, Donnie Lee Munsell, her sister, Sandra Jo Hooper Davis, her sister, Merle Jeanette Hooper Lesenby, her sister, Elizabeth Libby Lee Hooper Carter, her brother James Lee Hooper, and her brother David Wright Hooper. She is survived by her son Kenneth Kenny Ray Munsell Jr. and his wife Sheila of Amarillo, Texas, her son Mark Freeman Munsell of Bryan, Texas, her sister Mary Linda Hooper Wood and her husband Glenn of Leander, Texas, and numerous cousins, nieces, nephews, and close friends. Estelle's family would like to thank the staff at Brookdale Sleepy Hollow in Amarillo and the staff at Inhabit Hospice of Amarillo for their dedicated and compassionate care during her final weeks. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the Donnie Munsell Memorial Scholarship Fund in care of the Permian Basin Area Foundation, 3312 Andrews Highway, Midland, Texas, 79703. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram, Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 11th, 2023. There's a surgical solution for weight loss. Obesity is a disease that affects more than 72 million people in the United States. Being obese or overweight puts you at greater risk for health problems such as coronary heart disease, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, gallstones, breathing problems, and/or certain cancers. If you struggle with weight issues, the Way to Success program at Midland Memorial Hospital is here to help. We provide a comprehensive program focused on your individual situation and develop a plan tailored to your needs so that you take control of obesity and your life. Many factors can contribute to obesity, including genetics, illness, psychology, and lifestyle habits. At Way to Success, we work to determine the factors contributing to your weight issues, and through ongoing counseling and support groups, we work with you to improve your health by addressing the causes of your obesity. Am I a candidate for weight loss surgery? If you were significantly overweight and want to make a lifestyle change, you may be a candidate for weight loss surgery through Way to Success at Midland Memorial Hospital, partnered with Midland Surgical Associates. You could be a candidate for weight loss surgery if you meet any of the following criteria. You are more than 100 pounds over your ideal body weight. You have body mass index, BMI, of over 40. You have a BMI of over 35 and are experiencing obesity-related health conditions, such as high blood pressure or diabetes. And you are unable to achieve a healthy body weight even through medically supervised dieting. Surgery options. Way to Success specializes in two types of bariatric surgery, sleeve gastrectomy and Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. These surgeries can make changes in your digestive system to help you lose weight by limiting how much you can eat or by reducing the absorption of calories, or both. Both of these procedures help to reduce life-threatening obesity and related illnesses. Knowing more about each type of surgery we offer can help you have an informed conversation with one of our bariatric surgeons. All bariatric surgeries are performed at Midland Memorial Hospital. Financial eligibility. In many cases, insurance companies will help you cover the cost of bariatric surgery. Our insurance specialist will assist you in determining your eligibility with your insurance company. It is a team effort between you and our insurance specialist to ensure we do everything possible to gain an approval for surgical weight loss procedures. Once you are accepted into the program, you will work with our team to assist you in your preoperative weight loss journey. Way to Success accepts most major insurance carriers, including Medicare and Medicaid. If it is determined that your insurance will not cover your surgical procedure, we do offer a deeply discounted self-pay option. There are also a number of finance companies that offer assistance for surgery. How to get started informational seminar. If you are ready to start on your journey to better health, go to our website, MidlandSurgicalAssociates.com, and click on weight loss. After you enter some basic information, you will be directed to our informational seminar. The video is an explanation of the two procedures that are offered through our bariatric program, as well as the steps to get started on the journey to better health. Once you have watched the seminar, you will receive an email to complete your patient information forms. When our office receives your patient information forms, our scheduling coordinator will contact you to schedule your surgical consultation with one of our surgeons. If you have any questions, please contact Sunday Atkins, APRN, FNP-BC, our bariatric clinical manager and program coordinator, at 432-638-8081, or by email at sunday.adkins@midland-health.org. Mayo Clinic Minute. Some signs that unhealthy stress is becoming toxic. Stress is a normal physical and psychological response to the everyday demands of life. Small amounts of stress can motivate you to face daily challenges, but when stress becomes too much to manage, it can be unhealthy. Everyone experiences stressful times, but can you tell when stress is becoming toxic? Quote, I think some key signs are when we're not able to do our important life activities, like if we're not able to remember our appointments or work, procrastinating on important things like paying our bills or buying groceries, end quote, says Dr. Beth Rush, a Mayo Clinic neuropsychologist. When stress reaches a point where a person can no longer function in a meaningful way, it might be a sign of something more severe, says Dr. Rush. And you should see a health care provider. Quote, something serious may be going on like anxiety or depression, which needs to be treated and evaluated, end quote. She says stress can be unpredictable and it's important to take care of yourself. Quote, sleep, eat well, make sure you're exercising, end quote. What is cardiac arrest? Cardiac arrest, or sudden cardiac arrest as it is more formally known, is a medical emergency. It happens when an event, usually an electrical disturbance, quickly and unexpectedly causes your heart to stop working. It's not the same as a heart attack and is called sudden because it seems to happen without warning. Dr. Christopher DeSimone, a Mayo cardiac electrophysiologist specializing in abnormal cardiac rhythm, answers questions about cardiac arrest, the differences between cardiac arrest and heart attack, and why time is critical when treating someone with cardiac arrest. What happens during cardiac arrest? Cardiac arrest is when the heart cannot fulfill its duties and pump blood, especially oxygenated blood, around the body to get to critical areas such as the brain. Now, when there's an arrest, there are two things we go over. One could be the heart stops electrically, so the heart is not going to pump. The other one is the heart goes into an abnormal or lethal rhythm, which we call ventricular fibrillation. That's a more chaotic rhythm of the heart. So electrically, this heart's in a bad rhythm, and the ventricles are quivering and not pumping out. Ultimately, both things put you into cardiac arrest, sudden cardiac arrest, or sudden cardiac death. The heart cannot fulfill its duties of pumping blood to the lungs and the rest of the body so that all the nutrients and oxygen can get to the tissues of the heart, brain, or what have you. Why is immediate care like CPR and AED so critical? Survival is possible with immediate, appropriate medical care. Call 911 if able first. Once you know that someone suffered or suspect that they've suffered a cardiac arrest or a sudden cardiac arrest, it is important to restore the rhythm as fast as you can. A cardiac arrest could happen wherever we are in life, in the malls, schools, and at work. And if someone passes out, you want to make sure that they're breathing, their heart has a pulse, and their heart is pumping. If their heart's not pumping, then what people need to do is emergent CPR. And every time we walk by things in the hallway, whatever buildings we're in, there are all these things called AED, or automated external defibrillators. That's one of those things that people see on TV where they're shocking the patient back into a normal rhythm. Because if that device notes that the patient does not have a good rhythm and they're in this ventricular fibrillation, the machine will tell you to shock the heart and the machine will shock. You're trying to electrically restart the heart so that it goes back into its normal rhythm and you could have normal pumping function. Why is time so crucial for dealing with cardiac arrest? Time is critical because the heart's not pumping blood to the rest of the body, not to the lungs, not to the brain. The oxygen is not getting to the tissues as it usually does when the heart's pumping normally. Everyone knows that time is heart muscle. Time is myocardium. When someone's having a heart attack, think about the whole body having a heart attack. The brain is not getting blood, the liver is not getting blood, and the kidney is not getting blood. The heart itself isn't getting oxygenated blood, so all those tissues could die off. What is the typical treatment for a person having cardiac arrest? As soon as you can establish a rhythm, or if you're still doing CPR and have given medications and doing advanced cardiac life support, part of that is to put a tube down the patient's throat, intubation, and sedate them so that they're under anesthesia. Sometimes they'll even cool the patient. The patient will not be breathing on their own. A machine will be breathing for the patient, and sometimes what we do is we also cool the patient down. We're trying to let the tissues that might not have gotten oxygen for minutes, hopefully not hours, recuperate some of their function and make the body spend the least energy as we can. It's common for that to happen so that we can stabilize the patient. What is the difference between cardiac arrest and heart attack? When someone has a heart attack, it's more of a plumbing problem. The major arteries going to the heart get plugged up with a clot. When that happens, there's a blockage in the plumbing, and then the heart at that area might get weak because it can't pump, because it doesn't get blood flow to itself. And things could happen, like the patient goes into an electrical problem like sudden cardiac arrest. The plumbing leads to an electrical problem. That's common. But the heart attack is blocking the plumbing, so blood does not get to the heart. When someone has a sudden cardiac arrest or sudden cardiac death, it could be a manifestation of a heart attack. But sudden cardiac arrest doesn't mean you necessarily need to have heart blockages. Older adults who walk see lower heart disease rates. Older adults who walk 3 to 4 miles a day, 6,000 to 9,000 steps, were found to be 40 to 50% less likely to suffer a heart attack or stroke than those who walk a mile, 2,000 steps a day, according to research published in the journal Circulation. The findings were based on data from 8 studies involving 20,152 people, 18 and older, whose walking was measured by a device and whose health was tracked, on average, for more than 6 years. For those 60 and older, the more steps taken, the lower their risk for cardiovascular disease, CVD. For young adults, however, the study found no link between steps taken and CVD risk. The probable reason for that, the researchers wrote, is that CVD, quote, is a disease of aging, end quote, that generally is not diagnosable until risk factors such as high blood pressure, obesity, and diabetes have progressed for years. The researchers did not tabulate any link between distance walked and specific types of cardiovascular disease, such as heart failure or arrhythmia, but rather with heart disease overall. The study also found no additional benefit from a higher intensity or pace of walking. Health benefits tied to walking, however, have been the focus of multiple studies and ongoing debate. For instance, an earlier study from the same research group, published in The Lancet last March, found similar links between steps taken by older adults and a lower risk for death from any cause, as did a study published in JAMA, Internal Medicine, in September. That research, however, also found that a faster pace increased the risk reduction. And although the American Heart Association recommends 10,000 steps a day, it also notes that just a mile of walking can provide health benefits. New guidance: tackle childhood obesity early. Children struggling with obesity should be evaluated and treated early and aggressively, including with medications for kids as young as 12 and surgery for those as young as 13. The long-standing practice of, quote, watchful waiting, end quote, or delaying treatment to see whether children and teens outgrow or overcome obesity on their own only worsens the problem that affects more than 14.4 million young people in the U.S. Left untreated, obesity can lead to lifelong health problems, including high blood pressure, diabetes, and depression. Quote, waiting doesn't work, end quote, said Dr. Ihoma Anaili of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Quote, what we see is a continuation of weight gain and the likelihood that they'll have obesity in adulthood, end quote. Analyses groups sets ages at which kids and teens should be offered medical treatments such as drugs and surgery, in addition to intensive diet, exercise, and other behavior and lifestyle interventions, said Anelli, director of the Center for Healthy Weight and Nutrition at Nationwide Children's Hospital. In general, doctors should offer adolescents 12 and older who have obesity access to appropriate drugs, and teens 13 and older with severe obesity referrals for weight loss surgery, though situations may vary. The guidelines aim to reset the inaccurate view of obesity as, quote, a personal problem, maybe a failure of the person's diligence, end quote, said Dr. Sandra Hassink, Medical Director for the AAP Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight, and a co-author of the guidelines. Quote, this is not different than you have asthma and now we have an inhaler for you, end quote, she said. Young people who have a body mass index that meets or exceeds the 95th percentile for kids of the same age and gender are considered obese. Kids who reach or exceed the 120th percentile are considered to have severe obesity. BMI is a measure of body size based on a calculation of height and weight. Obesity affects nearly 20% of kids and teens in the U.S. and about 42% of adults, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The group's guidance takes into consideration that obesity is a biological problem and that the condition is a complex chronic disease, said Aaron Kelly, co-director of the Center for Pediatric Obesity Medicine at the University of Minnesota. Quote, obesity is not a lifestyle problem. It is not a lifestyle disease, end quote, he said. Quote, it predominantly emerges from biological factors, end quote. The guidelines come as new drug treatments for obesity in kids have emerged, including approval late last month of Wegovy, a weekly injection for use in children ages 12 and older. Different doses of the drug called semaglutide are also used under different names to treat diabetes. A recent study published in the New England Journal of Medicine found that Wegovy, made by Novo Nordisk, helped teens reduce their BMI by about 16% on average, better than the results in adults. Within days of the December 23rd authorization, pediatrician Dr. Claudia Fox had prescribed the drug for one of her patients, a 12-year-old girl. The drug affects how the pathways between the brain and the gut regulate energy, said Dr. Justin Ryder of Chicago, an obesity researcher at the Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. Zinc supplements and prostate issues. Dear Dr. Roach, I am taking terazosin and finasteride for my enlarged prostate. A friend has suggested taking zinc supplements and eating pumpkin seeds for additional zinc intake. Is there any proof that taking additional zinc will reduce the size of the prostate? Answer. There are some theoretical reasons based on animal studies and benchtop research as to why zinc might reduce the size of the prostate and even reduce the risk of prostate cancer. However, the clinical studies that have been done have not yet shown a reduction in risk, decrease in prostate size, or improvement in symptoms from taking zinc supplements or pumpkin seed oil. Further, I have seen a dramatic case of zinc overdose from zinc supplements, causing a copper deficiency with severe effects on the man who took the excess doses of supplements. Taking 100% of the recommended zinc levels won't hurt you, but probably won't help either. The combination of terazosin and similar drugs, called alpha blockers, and finasteride, which blocks a form of testosterone that enlarges the prostate as well as causes hair loss, is usually pretty effective. In men who aren't getting adequate responses, I recommend a visit with a urologist to be sure that the problem is really the prostate and not the bladder. In men with proven prostate enlargement causing symptoms despite medication, it's time to consider surgical therapies, of which there are many. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Dear Abby, my wife and I have been married for 17 years and have three wonderful daughters, ages 13, 10, and 5. Lately, I've felt like I'm the odd man out in a girls-only club. I wish I had a son I could share my interests with. I'd love to have someone I could take fishing, teach about classic cars, and play football and baseball with. I have tried introducing those interests to my girls, but they're not into them. Don't get me wrong, I love my daughters beyond words. I beam with pride at their cheerleading competitions, at their dance recitals, and at family gatherings, and I thank God for them daily. I recently asked my wife if we could try to have one more child in the hopes of having a son. My wife is healthy. All three pregnancies went fine, and we both make enough money to be good providers. She said she would think about it. I found out she mentioned this to her mother and sister, both of whom are livid. Her mom compares me to King Henry VIII. Abby, I wishing I had a son doesn't mean I don't love my daughters. It hurts that such a thing was suggested. Am I in the wrong to want to try one more time? Girl Dad in New York. Dear Girl Dad, you are not wrong. Your feelings are your feelings, and you are entitled to them. This decision is something that should be between you and your wife, not her extended family. If she feels three children are all she can handle, consider finding young males with whom to share your interests. Consider mentoring fatherless boys who need a role model. Go online and do some research. You may find there are opportunities in your community. However, if there aren't, contact Big Brothers Big Sisters of America, because there's a need for the mentoring you could offer. Dear Abby, I'm a high school student. I have many friends and acquaintances I consider near and dear to my heart. However, this year I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and both have impacted my relationships. I have this problem where I tend to soak up the emotions of my friends and loved ones. If a friend is feeling sad, I do my best to make them feel better. I have been assigned the role of therapist friend, but no matter the outcome, I always end up feeling sad. If my friends are happy, I'm happy. If my friends are depressed, I'm depressed. My therapist has described me as an empath and a sponge. I have yet to find how to live my own independent life. I'm sick and tired of feeling the way I feel because of other people. What can I do? Struggling in the Northwest. Dear Struggling, you are already working with the therapist. That's great news. Now that you know what your diagnosis is, you have someone who can help you manage your emotions so they won't swamp you. Be patient. Your therapist will help you find the tools to accomplish this, and they will be important for you later in life.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.